You are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Hey everyone, this is Leo Costa Jr. coming at you from SeriousGrowth.com. Today on the show, we have a gentleman named Larry Davis. Larry, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, listen, after reading your bio, there's one thing that I know that you and I have in common right off the bat, and that is we've been around a little bit. You've been you've been in the industry. When I say industry, I mean the personal training industry for over 20 years. And I got you beat by a little bit, but listen, we've been around long enough to know that there's nothing like firsthand, at least for me, nothing like firsthand experience to put things into perspective and some clarity. What do you think about that?
I agree. If you haven't lived it, you can't teach it.
It's hard, you know? I mean, it really is. And the thing about it, early in my career, you know, everything was black and white. This is like 4 or 5 years into when I started bodybuilding. Oh, I was absolutely sure how many reps you needed to do and weight that you needed to do to put on muscle. I mean, it was just black and white. And then, of course, as I go along and get more experience underneath my belt, I can tell you that there's actually more gray, I think, in a lot of ways than black and white. There are certain things that you can be certain about, but it certainly doesn't apply to everybody, you know, and that's kind of where the gray comes in. But I do think, and maybe you can just correct me if I'm wrong, but when you are around long enough, when you see stuff enough, you can say, wait a minute, that is pretty damn certain that is a certain way, you know, and this is a certain way, but otherwise it's kind of a gray. You have to know your stuff to be able to really pass that on, right?
You do. And not everything works for everybody else the way it works for you or one of your other clients.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll get more into that, but I just wanted to, let's just start off with, where did you get your certification?
With Dave Palumbo and Dowling College on Long Island.
Okay. Palumbo, that guy sounds very familiar. Who is he?
He's huge, 285.
Oh, yeah.
He competed back in your era, maybe a little bit after yours in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was Long Island grown, and he owns Species Nutrition.
Oh, okay. So he got into that side of it.
Yes. And he's a prep guy for show prep for thousands of people.
Yeah. Does he do it online and also in person?
Well, when he lived close to me, it was in person, but now he moved to Florida. Now it's all on the lawn.
Okay. Did he ever, come train at the Mecca in Venice? A lot of those guys do.
He probably did, but I don't really know everywhere he worked out.
Yeah.
He can walk into any gym and everybody knows him.
Yeah. So. Cause I mean, I recognize the name and I'm sure if I saw his face, I'd know who he was.
The East Coast Mecca is here where
we
train.
Yeah. Okay. What do you guys train? What's considered the East Coast Mecca?
Bev Francis.
Oh, I know who she is. I remember her when she competed.
Yeah, she has a gym in Syosset.
Is she still around?
Yes.
Is she still training?
Very much so.
Is that right?
She trains others.
Oh, okay. And was she
a judge and, you know.
Yeah. No, she was like, in fact, she was more muscular than most of the women, if I remember correctly back then. Is that right?
More muscular than some of the men.
Yeah. Yeah. I vaguely remember that, but she was,
She's a beautiful lady, a wonderful woman, very knowledgeable. Have any questions or concerns, she's always available.
Yeah. Sounds like she's good for the sport.
She's great for the sport.
Yeah. So the certification that you got, was it more, was it general or more specific?
It was specific to being what works for a trainer in real life.
Like in the trenches type stuff.
Yes. It was some book training, which we had a couple weekends and you had to take a test afterwards. I forget how many questions, 120 questions, yeah. Whatever. You also had to spend time in the gym and you had to train people and you got graded on your performance.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really important because one of the things I certify trainers as well. And one of the things when I got certified, it was about knowing how to study for a test. I'm trying to remember the actual name of the certified strength and conditioning specialist. is what the initials were, or the acronyms, or whatever. But you know, I had a study for a test that was going to be given in for theory, as well as a test for application. But
yeah,
I mean, they were hard tests to get through, but there was no hands-on stuff. And when I left that, I thought, you know, I passed it, but I thought, wow, you know, now I'm considered a personal trainer. And I thought to myself, what the hell's wrong with that? I mean, and so when I came back from that, what I ended up doing is creating a program that was just the opposite of that in many ways. Mine was all hands-on. It was in the trenches. This is what's really going to happen when you train these kinds of clients. You know, I think there's nothing better. Like we talked about that at the top of the show, you know, that firsthand experience, you know.
Yes.
And so my certifications have always been firsthand. And yet they have a study guide that they have to pass some written tests, but the emphasis is on more like hands-on. I think that that's how you really become a really great trainer over time, is by doing it that way. That's for sure. Okay. So when you trained and did that, so after that, did you, how long was the certification course? You said over a weekend?
No, it was several weekends in a row.
Oh, okay.
And then you had to pass the test, and then you had the hands-on, and then you had to shadow one of the experienced trainers in an associate of Dave, had his own gym.
Got it.
And we had to shadow them while they were in the gym as yeah. well.
That's the way to do that, you know. There's so many courses. The thing that's really interesting about certifications is there's no governing body that I know of, which simply means that anybody can certify. I can certify, you can, Palumbo, and there's a lot of organizations out there, but there's no governing body unless they've changed that, which is kind of scary sometimes with some of the people that are out there getting people certified. You know, it's some of these trainers that I've seen around, because I'm still a member at Gold's Gym, and I'm around gyms quite often, and I see some of the stuff, and then on social media, forget about it. You know, some of the stuff that's on social media is, it's like, I know I can just tell in 5 minutes that you really don't know what the hell you're talking about, and people are putting themselves in your hands, which is scary.
Well, there are some of us that have more experience with hands-on, and some of us who have more experience with science.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have a little bit of science and more hands-on.
I agree, totally. And in your bio, you said you didn't start lifting until age 50?
Correct. I was certified for over 10 years, and I never lifted. I trained people, but I never lifted.
Unbelievable. So
I played soccer until I was 48.
Okay, so then I just want to be crystal clear, because I think I can still hear pretty well. I can't see worth a damn, but I can hear pretty well. You were training people for 10 years, and you hadn't lifted any weights?
Correct.
Okay, you got to tell me about that. I'm very interested. Well, how are you training them? For what? For their sport? Or, I mean, how were you playing?
More specific, mostly for soccer, wrestling. I had exercises that I did that pertained to that particular sport, more or less. Then I had general exercises. Did we do bench press? Yes. Did we do squats? Not particularly, because the type of the age of the individuals varied. So I'd rather use the machines. It was easier, quicker, less stress on the back if they didn't have the proper equipment, you know.
Yeah. So then you had some level, like maybe some high school conditioning where you lifted weights before. I mean, you had some knowledge.
No.
Of that. None.
We forget how old I am. We did isometrics.
Oh my goodness.
Buckets of water. Hold them up like this for wrestling. You put your hands down, you're going to clean the mats.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good motivator.
and we did a lot of running.
Okay. So you just try whatever you...
Push-ups, dips, climb the ropes, pull-ups, the basics, president's test.
That's body through space training. That's good stuff. You know, using your own body weight. And I'm sure like what you're talking about where you have the hands out like this, that's just changing, putting your body at an angle that makes everything a lot harder. That's smart. Yes. You know, that's actually very smart. Do you remember a guy by the name of Vince Gironda?
No, I don't recall that.
Yeah, because you're not old enough now. He was back in the 60s. He was, he's a guy that, they call him the Iron Guru. You can look him up one day, you know. And he very famous, Vince. He's, he was very cantankerous, but he, old school. And he's a guy that trained, he just hated Wiederland. He just did not like the, what Wieder was doing and the way they were promoting their athletes back then, you know. So when Arnold came over, when Lou Ferrigno came over, these guys, a lot of people don't know this, these guys came to Vince's gym in North Hollywood. And I was shocked when I went to his gym because I was expecting this really elaborate place, you know. I had just been in the sport now at this point, maybe, or bodybuilding training for about 6 years or something like that, 5 years. And I got to go to Vince's gym. It was just like a piece of crap. I mean, it was low ceiling. It was, I mean, compared to the weights in the weight rooms that I had seen at that point, it was prehistoric, but it was functional. It was old school. You know, this, I loved it. And what Vince taught me, and it kind of reminds me of what you're saying, was he said, it's about the, changing the angles and training different angles of the body to create a look. I mean, I think I had never heard of that until I went to Vince's. And body through space, I learned that that kind of training from Vince. So it sounds like that's exactly what you were doing.
Yeah, we had a, I was a gymnast also. Okay. So I would have, you'd climb the ropes with no feet, sit in an L, and you just use your hands and you climb up the rope.
Yeah.
And the rope in the gym could be 30 feet high. And then you got to lower yourself down, no legs. And, you know, try doing that with dips and pull-ups, sit-ups.
Man. Well, listen, one of the things I did know is my one of my kids ended up wrestling. I gained a whole new respect for wrestlers. I mean, when I was in high school, and sometimes the football players would go in and we'd watch the wrestlers do their workouts. And you just, what an amazing workout that they went through. I think that wrestlers are probably, that's a, in my opinion, I think it's one of the hardest sports in 4 minutes or however many minutes that you actually wrestle, but not to mention all the training that goes up to that. You guys are, you guys have a mindset that is just astounding to me, you know?
It's, they're tough.
Oh man, I never want to mess. I mean, once my kid had like some wrestling knowledge, nobody should mess with you, you know, because you know stuff, right?
It's well, hopefully you just, if you get in a situation, you could, you know, hold somebody from hitting you. That's basically, you know.
Yeah. So it sounds like you then you fell back on your the things that you learned from your gymnastics and your wrestling as far as initially and when you were training other clients.
Correct.
So what happened? What would you do? Like you were also a boxer, right?
I boxed for 2 years. I at 48, I stopped playing soccer and I boxed for 2 years.
Okay. So
my first fight at 50.
Okay. So when you were training your clients, then because like with me, one of the things that I talk about are the three components when I'm training. I have a one personal training studio that I still have. I love it, and I still have that. And so what we're known for is the three components, weight training, cardio, nutrition, because I know that if you manipulate those three components throughout a program, you have the best chance of getting in the best shape because you're manipulating and controlling the variables, so to speak. So my question when you were training your people back then before training, how did you address like nutrition or did you?
Well, my knowledge of nutrition has increased over the last 10 years working directly with Dave as he's my coach, personal coach for my show prep.
Okay.
So you look at the body, if they're morbidly obese, any type of movement, lessen the food intake, reduce the carbs, reduce some of the protein from, say, 12 ounces if they were eating that much down to 6 ounces. You still have to keep it, the nutrients coming in. You got the protein, the fats, and the carbs. But I like to reduce carbs and add more fats.
Okay. But I guess what I'm asking you then is, because I understand what you're saying, but like when you were back, when you first started doing personal training before you had lifted a weight, when you were advising your people, maybe I'm not understanding you correctly, but I think I am. Basically, the way you're advising your people was just using some common sense.
Correct.
Is that right?
Push away from the table. Don't overeat everything in moderation.
There you go.
And then you see how they react to different types of food restrictions.
Yeah.
And you might add something back in.
Yeah. And you know, in my opinion, the truth of the matter is, from all the stuff that I've seen, and as you know, when you are bodybuilding, your body is basically an ongoing experiment in the gym. And that includes also with nutrition. I mean, you try everything because you don't know until you try it. Because like you said, you know, not everybody is going to respond the same way. You know, you can put the same training routine that Arnold Schwarzenegger did, but not everybody's going to get the same results. It's just, that's common sense, you know. But one of the things, Larry, that I learned, in my opinion, is that I talk about, listen, I don't care what anybody is saying out there. A calorie is a calorie in the way that it breaks down in your body, because it breaks down from food and it breaks down to energy that produces heat. All the macros that you eat do the very same thing that way. So in that sense, a calorie is a calorie. Now, when you start understanding how to manipulate the macros, the protein, carbs, and fat, now you can make calories more efficient because, for example, you can eat foods that are high in fat. And for example, if you put fat on a baked potato, that the release of sugar is going to be slower in your bloodstream. So you can make that baked potato actually goes from a bad carb to a good carb because of the fat, stuff like that, you know. But it sounds like to me, it's you were just using common sense, which I think common sense goes so far. And a lot of times we just don't use that, you know. And that's how you were getting to that result nutrition wise. Now, once you with your clients, once you started learning more about nutrition through Palumbo or some of these people, then do you have like a certain opinion or an idea of, for example, how and what's the best way for nutrition?
Well, depend upon the person. Everybody's different. But if they're training for a show or just want to look like they are, there's a certain meal plan I put in process. If somebody is overweight or morbidly obese, it's a different program. It's somewhat similar, but I like to reduce the carbs to certain types of carbs, depending upon where we are in the process.
Uh-huh.
And I'll always have fats in the diet. Okay. I'd much rather get my energy from fats than carbs.
Okay. Now, when you're, are you on a glucose sugar diet or a free fatty acid metabolism? I know you're saying that you like fats in your, and I understand why, but the, are you generally, for example, do you know what your carb intake is?
Yes.
Okay. Is it about 30 grams?
Oh, it's 30 grams per meal.
Okay. So that tells me right there, because like these diets are like the Atkins diet. Do you remember the Atkins diet back
yes.
then? Okay.
Yes.
Atkins, keto. I wrote a book years ago called the anabolic diet. The similarity between all those are that if you're eating 30 grams of carbs or less. And when you do that, your metabolism, you have two different metabolisms in the body. And when you eat 30 grams of carbs for 3 days in a row, you flip your metabolism over and your body right. is now burning fat as energy. See, I wasn't sure if you were on that kind of a diet or you were eating more carbs.
We switch.
Oh, you do?
We alternate back and forth.
Okay.
Depending upon the individual and where we are in the show prep process.
So tell me a little bit more about what you mean about back and forth, just out of curiosity.
Well, for instance, I will go 3 days carbs, 1 day no carbs. So okay. it would be protein and carbs for 3 days, and it would be protein and fats for 1 day. As I get closer, that might switch to 2 days, to 3 days, to 4 days, to 5 days, protein, fats, no carbs, and switch back and forth depending upon how much I'm burning uh-huh. or the client is burning
yeah.
and where they are in the process to stage.
Okay. So then what you're doing is that you're really using, you're taking a look at that body. You're saying, okay, here's what that body needs right now.
Yes. If you get too flat, we might carb you up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good idea. Sometimes, and this is where what we were talking about before is like, if you're too much into science, you won't recognize that instinctive, you know, it's the difference between, I learned this from Tom Platz, and it was like, he would do some stuff like 3 or 4 days in a row. Like he trained the same body part. I'm saying, Tom, you know, the way I've learned this, and this is me being younger at that time, you know, I didn't have the kind of, obviously the kind of experience that he does or he did at that time, you know? But he told me, he says, it's more about him being instinctive and intuitive about his approach to training. So some days he'd go in and, you know, this is a little bit different because it's weight training, but you're doing the same thing in nutrition. And he would train the same body part like 4 or 5 days in a row, you know, because that body part was dragging or, you know what I mean?
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Train the same body part 5 days in a row.
I know. And listen, I know. You know, I get that. But you know, how it's
unless you're wrestling or you're participating in a sport, you're playing soccer, you have to run every day. You have to do kicks. You have to stretch. You have to do certain things that belong in the game or the sport. That's training the same body. It's your whole body.
Yeah.
Every day. But lifting, I would never lift body part.
I saw Tom. One of the things I did is I enlisted Tom because when I was coming through the sport, I got up to the regional, just out of the local level competitions, and I was moving into the regional. So I was moving up, and I decided to, back then is when I wrote one of my first training courses. I think it was called Bulgarian Burst. It was the first one. I just don't know when Tom came on board, but it was around the first or second time after I'd written a book. And I decided that I needed to get somebody who knew more than I did, because I was coming into the shows kind of looking about the same, you know. I wasn't going to that next level. And this is when I brought Platz in. And I said, you know, I'm at your mercy. I'll do whatever you tell me. Yeah, if you tell me to knock my head up against the wall 15 times, it's going to put on like an inch on my bicep. I'm there. I'm game, you know. And so I started training with him at Gold's Gym. Larry, I tell you what, I saw some stuff with Tom, you know, like his loose style training. I mean, I come from a, you know, background and I understood it as we went along where, you know, the form and technique was, you know, you're only as good as your form and technique. But Tom took that to a whole nother level. I don't know if you heard much about the way he used to train.
No, I'm not familiar with his.
Yeah. And I mean, he would do, you know, reps of 100. It was insane, absolutely insane. And the whole idea behind his training was just to shock the hell out of the body, you know, to get a response. But you're borderline overtraining all the time. But he was smart about it, you know. He went to and again, it worked for Tom. And this is kind of like the point that you're making. Hey, I would never do that. You would never do that. But it goes to show you that he did that, and look at the results he got. You know, there's something to be said for that.
There were some times where I would go through several weeks of training process where I would increase the volume of reps as I decreased the weight. For instance, I would start with 5 10s on each side of a barbell, and I would do a flat bench, and I would do 10. And I'd strip, someone else would strip the 10 pounds off,
yeah,
and go all the way down to 1 10 on each side.
Yeah.
And instead of doing 10 reps, I'd have to do 20.
Right.
And I'd have them put them back on. So you had to do 50, you'd have to do 100 reps.
Yeah. Yeah. You did that in a different way, you know?
Right. But I would never do 100 reps with twice as much weight on that. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did it with enough weight where if I struggled to move the weight, I know I wouldn't tear anything, because what's the worst that happens? 20 pounds or 60 pounds falls on my chest and it just sits there. That's not a big deal.
Yeah. So what you're talking about is the way I learned this during, you know, weight training and bodybuilding has had lingo over the years, like everything else does, you know, lingo changes. But what you were doing, it sounds like you were doing ascending or descending sets, descending and ascending sets, essentially.
Correct.
And one of the things that I ended up learning right away, because I've talked about this before, when I'd read I had my nose in muscle and fitness magazines back then, you know, all the muscle mags. And, you know, it was almost worse to have your nose in that, because everybody had their own way of training. And what I learned, Larry, once I went to Gold's Gym and was actually around the guys, they weren't really they weren't really training exactly the way they were talking in the magazines, because some of them had their own agendas, you know, like Mincer when he did, Heavy Duty. I don't know if you remember Mike Mincer and some of these guys, but they talked about, like, you know, they made it sound like all they did was like, that's really, you know, one rep max or 1 to 3 reps and very few sets, but really, really heavy. But then when you actually analyzed, and I was there, when you actually got to know the inside of all that, they were actually doing more volume conditioning, which is what you're talking about. You're doing a lot of volume, not as much weight, but you're doing more volume of work instead of doing heavier weight. Is that right?
And then I would change it up because that actually helped me lift the heavier weights. You know, when you get with the heavier weights, you're stuck halfway up.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get that muscle endurance, that last half of the rep becomes easier once you have that endurance.
Yeah.
So then the next 8 weeks I would do heavier weights.
Yeah.
And then each week you try to go up 5 pounds, 2.5 pounds, 5 pounds on each side.
Yeah.
You try to get 4 to 6 good reps out of it. And then, you know.
Yeah. But, so let me ask you, when did you do it like every 8 weeks or was it just by feel?
I feel. I couldn't tell you if it was 6, 8. Whenever I felt like that was enough, sometimes you just get mentally tired of doing the same thing.
Yeah. You're very instinctive. One of the things I learned stuff like not only in the gym, but I wanted to learn how the body worked, you know, the algorithms of how the physiology works. I learned some of this stuff when I was traveling over in Eastern Europe about the 21 days, how your body functions in 21 day cycles when you're talking about regimens. But what you're talking about is your body, you were sensitive and knowing when your body was entering into a plateau. And then at that point, at some point, you would make a slight change. You'd start lifting a heavier weight. And that was actually very smart. What part of the problem with CrossFitters is that they change way too soon, not realizing that what's really adapting at that point is the mind, is the brain, because the brain is not a muscle. It's an organ, but it acts like a muscle. So too many of these, and I'm not saying that CrossFitters aren't, that's a huge sport, but it's not the most efficient way to train based on your physiology, like it is, like what you're talking about. You know, you do X amount of weeks with volume, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're instinctively knowing you're hitting that plateau, and there's nothing wrong with that, but then you switch gears a little bit, and you go into a little heavier weight for a while. You probably were going back and forth. Am I assuming?
It's part of the process.
Yeah, exactly. Now, did you change your training when you were like when you went from off season to pre contesting? Did your training stay the same, or did you change that?
It changed, and I think this season it changed more so than other seasons where. You know, my old saying is, I don't have to lift the most, I just have to look like I do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So that's what I tell all the young kids who would sit there and try to lift up the heavy weights.
Right.
But this season, show season, I actually backed off further from stage date than normally. I actually went just to maintain, just to get the pump. It didn't matter if I was doing 15-pound dumbbells or 30-pound dumbbells. If I got the same pump out of it, I reduced it.
Yeah.
Just to make sure of no injury.
Yeah.
Which normally I would have full gun all the way in.
Yeah.
But this year, you know, I said, you know, I don't want to take a chance of an injury. I got into my own head a little.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I think what you did was smart, Larry. Absolutely 100% smart. And you made a comment earlier on. Listen, you're competing in a bodybuilding competition, not a strength competition. So what you said made perfect sense. It's not like, you know, I don't want to lift like, I just have to look like I lift a little weight. But you know, you're not being judged on how strong you are up there, for goodness sake.
No. At this point, I really don't even consider myself a bodybuilder.
Uh-huh.
I'm a body sculptor.
Oh, okay.
Because I really want to, I may not have the biggest set of muscles, but you can see them all.
Yeah.
And that's really what the goal is in the master's divisions of the competitions now.
Yeah. No, I like that, you know, because I think I've always thought that body body sculpting, bodybuilding, whatever you want to call that, I think it's a creative act. And you're basically, you know, we take a look at our body as a, I'll speak for myself. I took a look at my body as a piece of clay, and then I wanted to mold it in a certain way, you know? So, and, but I understand what you, and the beauty of this is you have control of that to a great degree as far as how you want to look. You know, there's different, I came in looking different and different. I couldn't change my body type, but I could change nuances in the way that I put like some muscle on the shoulders, because I was wide waisted, you know, so to create that be, you know, like that's sculpting.
I'm wide waisted. I'd be a perfect person to carry a baby. I got big hips.
Yeah.
And a short man, it doesn't look good on the bodybuilding stage.
Absolutely.
And it's great for boxing and it's great for soccer because you can protect the ball or you can protect your body.
Yeah.
But on a bodybuilding stage, you know, from playing soccer, my legs are big from front to back.
Right.
Very little sweep.
Yeah.
So if you're starting to lift at 50 years old, very difficult to build a sweep.
Yeah. That's for sure.
But, you know, what if I don't have the size, if I have the conditioning, that's going to bring me up a level.
Yeah, exactly. I like your approach. I think it's very, very, I totally agree with you. Speaking of fighting, I'm going to talk about your boxing a little bit, okay? And do you remember the actual fight that you won? And so first let me ask you that. Did you actually remember the fight that you won?
Yes.
Okay, because I don't know about you, but when I first competed, my very first show, I practiced my routine, because back then, and it's a little bit different now from what I've seen. Back then, you had an hour and a half. Listen to me, a minute and a half on stage, and you choreographed for your routine. Right?
Yes.
So
now it's a minute.
Yeah, they cut it down. You know, and back then with me, my time, it was like choreographing, like the moves that you made were choreographed to the damn music. Where now, some of the stuff that I see now, it seems like guys are just moving to random music. They just go through a series of whatever, and there's no I used to be known for like best routine because I've spent time on that. Arnold talked about it, you know, and so anyway, when that first show came around, it's a good thing that I had all those hours underneath my belt of training, because I went out on that stage. I was afraid to be in front of, believe it or not, in front of people like that. And here I am on stage, and I went through this whole routine, Larry, and I came off stage and I didn't remember a damn move that I made. And yet I had a really great routine. So that's why I'm asking you, did you remember that? Like when you're fighting, did you actually remember the fight?
Oh, I remember the fight. It's nothing like getting hit in the face to wake up. I mean, it's quite the shock, you know. And I was 50 and I fought a 27-year-old kid who was a cop.
Really?
Yeah, he was pretty tough. He was bigger, taller than I, but he didn't weigh much more than I did.
Yeah.
And I was a natural lefty.
Oh.
But they converted me to conventional.
Okay.
So my jab was actually a punch.
Right.
My left hand.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did okay because I hit harder than they did because my body was more mature.
Right.
But I wasn't faster.
Yeah.
I'd take three or four to the head just to get one body shot in on them. And I hit them in the ribs and just knocked the wind out.
You sound like Rocky Marciano, right? What he did? He'd take a bunch of punches?
I took it to the top of the head because I was so much shorter than he was. It was kind of funny, but anyway.
And I was going to ask you, how was your technique? I mean, you know, technical wise, were you pretty good?
I would say I was fair. I mean, it takes years to be great.
Yeah.
In any sport.
Right.
I was okay. I could still hold my own, but you know, I'm not going to get in the ring and go full out spar now, but those are actual fights, and you know, a ref and three judges, and
I remember one time when I listened to, I think it was Tyson, that he was doing some interview, and he says, you know, you train and you get, you know, you have all this strategy that you're going to use, but the minute you get punched, it all goes out the door, you know.
Exactly. That's why you never panic, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
Panic. You have to stay the course. If they get the better of you, they get the better of you.
It's probably like when I was playing football, you know, I'd be really nervous like when I went out on the field. But the minute I took that first hit, I was like, ah, oh, okay, I'm relaxed now. I don't know if it's like that when you're boxing. I have no idea. I did boxing one time at practice, and I said, I'll never do that again because I got hit in the head. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, you don't have a helmet on.
No, you know? No. Well, we had helmet. We had the headgear on.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Still.
No, these are amateur fights. Yeah.
Yeah, but still.
All it does is stop you from bleeding. It doesn't stop you from feeling anything.
Yeah.
No, you get hit in the head, it hurts.
Yeah. How long did that fight go? How many rounds?
Three rounds.
So am I assuming that you won on points?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And you did that more than one time?
I had two fights. Won both of them. And then I said, that's you know, after the 2 years, I said, that's enough.
Yeah. You were just curious. Like, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was curious. And you know what? I got down to where my body, blood pressure was in better shape. I was leaner. I was 140 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's little.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, let me try this. I started seeing that they were having these bodybuilding shows. I really didn't know much about it. I mean, I was intrigued by it in the 70s and the 80s when I was in college. I mentioned to you, I had done my first show in 1977.
Right.
I was a walk-on. I didn't even train. I didn't never lifted a weight.
That cracks me up.
Like, I know. I just walked. They said, the guy down the hall from me said, Larry, you should do this show. I said, what show? He said, well, we have the bodybuilding show at the end of the year at our campus.
Yeah.
And there was no weight class. Nothing.
Everybody just all together.
Everybody on stage. I took second overall and I got best legs.
Oh, my goodness. That ain't bad for somebody just walking on, I guess.
Well, you could have seen the guy that won. He was about 210 pounds. He played football. He was a running back. He was tremendous. I was in awe of him.
Yeah.
You know?
That's funny.
But
how did you learn how to, I mean, did I'm assuming that you guys had to hit some mandatory poses?
Well, the director of the dorm, I don't recall his name now, was an Asian guy who used to be a bodybuilder. So he said, this guy introduced me to him and said, why don't you let me show you the poses? So he went through the poses. And then I just, you know, you show your leg, you show your leg, you do a bicep pose, you do the old Superman pose, you do a back bicep, you know. I don't even think I did a side chest, but I don't, you know what, they didn't really have us do all those mandatories against one another. We had to do our own routines. It was, I don't even know if it was sanctioned by NPC, if that even existed back then or.
Oh man, that's
whatever.
When I saw that, when you competed and you had not ever done anything like that before, it just cracked me up that you walked on and you ended up winning, what, second, you said?
Yeah, second.
That's crazy.
But there was some, I was conditioned. There was nobody who'll ever beat me on conditioning.
Yeah. I'm just saying, though, from what I know of, you know, it's really important in the way you, you probably know that now that you've got more underneath your belt, but it's very important the way you stand on stage, you know, to minimize.
It's all presentation, no matter where you go, in business, in pleasure, sports.
Right.
The way you present yourself, that's the way people are going to see you.
And I guess if you just had nothing but confidence and didn't know how to pose, I mean, that would go a long ways too. But I know from being up on stage and even with Arnold, you know, he had weak points, but he understood how to stand to minimize those weak points while accentuating the strong points. I hardly can believe that, you know, because you had no training in that, that you probably just stood up there and just say, here you go, right here. Here's your double bicep.
That's what I did. Hey, take a look. Do you like this?
Yeah.
Boom. Like this? There you go. Now you're looking both. There you go.
That,
you know?
That cracks me up. Like I saw that and I just started laughing out loud, man. Seriously. So anyway, So what intrigued you to bodybuilding, body sculpting? Tell me what actually, now you got into boxing, you did these other things, but what made you want to get into this sport now?
Well, I always liked it. Looking at people and say, wow, that guy's built. Wow.
Yeah.
That woman, she's got a ton of muscle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then someone made a challenge. You know, I'm up for any challenge.
Yeah.
I said, oh, you know, I like, in a conversation, I like bodybuilding to a coach or something. He says, no, you don't have the bodybuilding type. Like, what do you mean I don't have the bodybuilding type body? What do you mean? Anybody can have it. Yeah. Little did I know, I didn't have the bodybuilding type.
Yeah.
So I had to go out and build it.
Yeah.
It took years to have my shoulders wider than my waist.
Yeah.
Because, you know, any type of participation in sports was the boxing was always like this. My obliques were so large, it almost looked funny.
Yeah. Because you took so many shots to the obliques that was the way it adapted to that, right?
Yeah, I exposed them because, hey, go ahead, hit me in the stomach. Yeah. I don't care.
And that was your body as adaptation that said, you know, here's some big ass abs.
And it took, like I said, it took years. And the first couple of years of bodybuilding, I did fairly well because of conditioning. And when I say fairly well, at 51, I did my first show. I did train for that. I worked with Dave Palumbo and we had the keto diet, the old keto diet for 20 weeks.
Yeah.
And I went from, I don't know, high 160, 170 overweight. And I went on stage at 141 to 142. I forget exactly what it was, but I sent you a picture of that.
I saw that. Yeah.
And I don't know what my body fat was because we didn't take it at that time, but I'm telling you, it was below 5%. And anybody tells you, oh, 5% is easy.
Oh.
Yeah, let me see you at 5%.
Exactly.
Who can do it. But I could never get that lean again this now.
Yeah.
I have too much muscle mass to.
That's right. And that's what the difference is. You know, these guys were talking back then. I'd read the said, oh, yeah, I got down to 2%. Bullshit. That's you're lying. Number one, you didn't get down to 2%, and it really didn't matter as much as the difference between muscle and fat ratio. A guy that's weighing 250 or 280 on stage can be at 6 or 7% body fat, and he's going to be ripped to shreds just because of the muscle to fat ratio. That's what you're talking about.
Right. Now they wrote me up after that show in a little newspaper, best conditioned, least muscle.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I was the smallest on stage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You've seen it when they had the winners of each category up for overall.
Yeah.
You got the heavyweights and the super heavyweights weighing 230, 240 pounds, and I weigh 142.
Yeah, right.
By the way, you can be on stage with them.
Yeah, 100 pounds difference there.
You just can't compete with them. So, of course, you don't win the overall, but I won my class.
Yeah.
And then it took me 10 years to actually gain about 28 to 30 pounds on stage.
Yeah. Net weight.
So you're doing, you know, maybe three on average, let's just call it three pounds a year. To gain 3 pounds a year the old fashioned way.
Yep.
Without any enhancements is hard.
Yeah.
But then I learned how to eat.
That's right.
So I participated. I did a show when I was 51, then I did a couple shows when I was 52, then I took 2 years off. Then I did shows 54, 55. When the weight class changed from 35 to 45 to 55 in the master's classes, when I turned 55, I said, I'm going to go compete now against people my own age.
Yeah.
And then they changed it. That year, they changed it 35, 40, 50, 60. So now I'm still the old guy in the ring.
Yeah.
I was in the top five, top three, you know. But when I took another couple of years off from 57 to 60. I competed as a 60-year-old because then I said, well, now I know it's 60 and over.
Yeah.
And I took, you know, I went to the national stage instead of the, you know, regionals. I won the regionals and I went to the national stage. There's a big difference between local shows, regional shows, and national shows.
Oh, yeah.
You don't realize until you get on stage and you look and say, whoa, where did these guys come from?
Yeah, no, that's true.
What planet are they from? You know?
Yeah.
And I did well. You know, I'm nationally ranked. I was in the top two or three for the last couple of years. And then I went, this year, I did the North Americans.
Okay.
Which is U.S., Canada, and Mexico.
Where did they hold that?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I competed in Pittsburgh And I was going to ask you, were you actually competed at the Nationals? Was it also in Pittsburgh?
Yes, Masters Nationals.
Yeah, yeah. I competed in that show that you did, a Masters Nationals, when I was 56. I competed at what I was really.
But that was 3 years ago.
No, man, I'm 64.
You're 64?
I'm an old son of a gun.
Oh, I thought you were 59, according to my. Oh, okay.
No.
So, oh, that's a long time ago. I was going to say, gee, we would have been on a stage together.
Exactly. No, when I took a 13-year layoff.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, and then I was just, you know, what I always have a reason for doing stuff, and like you, I like the challenge. I wanted to find out if muscle really did have memory, because, you know, we as a bodybuilder, we just believed it in just blind faith, if nothing else, you know, connect the mind to the muscle. We believed in that.
Right.
And, you know, muscle has memory, all that good stuff. Well, I was curious. So I thought, I'm going to go, and after 13 years, I'm going to go compete again, see how that feels and looks and how the body is going to respond. And I tell you something, it actually does have memory. You know, I probably need another year to get on there. But what I was most surprised about after 13 years is how many damn guys looked so damn good at that age. You know?
Oh, yeah. Nowadays,
holy.
I used to think that people in their 40s looked old when I was younger.
Yeah.
And they probably did.
Yeah.
But when I got to 40 and I was still playing soccer, we didn't look so old.
Yeah, right.
And then you look at the 60-year-olds and the 65 and 70-year-olds, and they really didn't look too old. Now, on stage, if you see the rest of the people our age, you know, in the 60s,
yeah,
they look good.
They look good. I agree. Totally.
Wow.
They can be hope.
The last time I was at Pittsburgh Nationals in 2018, they had an 80-year-old competing.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
I have a friend of mine who, his name is Roger Sagoda. I'll give him a little plug. He's 85 years old. He competed, last time I think he competed was in his 70s. But he's a trainer. He still trains. And I train with him every day. You know, I see him at the gym every day.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing. You know, and what, not only that, not only do these guys look good, but I was surprised that there were so many of the class. You know, when I was.
Well, last year we had 30 guys in the 60 and over class.
That's crazy.
In the different weight classes.
That's crazy.
This year I did Team Universe, they call it, and it's held in Jersey. I believe there was maybe 11 or 14. So it dropped down a little. But of those 11 or 14, there was no weak. There's nobody weak.
Yeah.
Nobody.
I find that to be inspiring, to tell you the truth.
And when I did North Americans, there were 20-something.
That's unbelievable. I love it, you know, because, you know, I'm of the belief, I still train. I'm just like, my strategy now, like Platts used to say, I'm just an old guy having fun in the gym. You know, I don't have near the intensity, nor do I want that, you know. But I'm still in pretty damn good shape for somebody that's my age, and I'm proud of that fact.
I hate when you added that last part.
Which part
was my age?
I know. It's a bad habit.
You're in good shape.
It's a bad habit, okay?
Yeah, but people say to me, oh, 60, you look 60. You look good for your age.
For your age, I know. That's bull crap. I take it back. I didn't say it, okay? I'll edit it out.
I didn't hear it.
Okay. But listen, there's no question in my mind, you know, because now I've been training. I started late kind of in training because in the sport that I was in back when, they didn't want the guys that played the quarterback and the wide receiver, all the skilled positions, they called them back then. Nobody goes in the gym, you guys. You guys go over there and play tiddlywinks over here. That's for the linemen, you know, to go in the weight room. So I didn't actually start training until I was like 27. And that's late for the sport, you know. At least to be
51.
I know. I'm amazed, and you look great. By the way,
some people say, "Oh, you're lucky you started so late. You have no injuries."
Well, you know, that's one way to look at it, I guess. But you know, so but now that I've been in the gym since I was 27 years of age, and I tell you what, I do not miss the gym. I get up really early in the morning. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Bad habit. But I get up at 3 o'clock every morning. By the time I get to the gym, it's 4. And I've been doing that. And I can tell you what, I know for a fact that if you go in and you do a routine like this and you make it not so extreme like when I was competing, it's really, really, really healthy for you. And
that's invigorating just to do something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I would never do anything different like that. And as a personal trainer, I've trained so many people over the years, and like and they all get benefit from it if it's done right. And even like pregnant women, you know, they're on a way, they're on a program now, whereas before it was, you know, they did, you know, you weren't supposed to be near that, and you know, go home and stay and you know, come
put
back,
your feet up and sit in bed.
Yeah, come back 4 or 5 or maybe, you know, 2 weeks later. But it's amazing what conditioning like that can do for your, I mean, not only your just physical health, but your emotional health, you know. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. Let me ask you, okay, so you've been a personal trainer for over 20 years. Now, here's a stat that maybe you know about. Do you know that 95% of the people who get into our industry, whether it be personal trainers or someone who owns gyms, they fail? 95%. I got this stat from a guy, and it's a legit stat. And I thought to myself, you know, for me being in the industry, I've been in my own business for 37 years. Over those years, I've had several gyms. It's always been personal training. I've run a lot of personal trainers inside my gyms. Now I only have 2. But over the years, I've watched gyms come and go, Larry. And I've seen lots of personal trainers. Most of them fail. And so, you know, what do you think if that's the case? Because I don't know, like, have you seen that occurrence? Have you seen lots of trainers come through over the years?
Oh, absolutely. And the same thing with the gyms. The people that open gyms aren't necessarily the smartest business sense. You got to get paid for what you know. And a lot of trainers get burnt out because they're young and they figure, oh, it's an easy way. Work in a gym, it's going to be easy. I can make money.
Yeah.
There's only a few people that really truly make a lot of money as a trainer, because the gym takes most of the money,
right,
from the training sessions, unless you have your private studio and then you can do it that way.
Right.
Or you pay the gym a small stipend to rent their gym, and then you bring in all your own clients, and then you can make better money.
Yeah.
But it's a lot harder than people think to sustain that effort. A lot of trainers have to work 50 to 60 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
weekends, nights, you know, you may not have a life,
right?
As these young people think, but you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly.
To be successful in life. And just because you may have failed at that effort at that particular time, it's really not a failure unless you didn't learn anything.
Right.
If you learn something from it, that's really, to me, it's just it's a success in story instead of a failure.
Yeah.
So you realize, oh, that's really not, it's not for me.
Right.
Well,
right.
I didn't really help as many people as I thought it was going to help.
Yeah.
And why did you get into that field to begin with?
Right.
As far as gyms closing, sometimes they cannibalize themselves by offering discounts and more discounts for people to join.
Yeah.
And then if you have to wait to get on a machine, how frustrating is that?
Exactly.
Especially nowadays when all you see is this.
Yo, man, drives me nuts.
Texting on the phone.
Drives me nuts.
You're waiting to use the machine. You always say, excuse me, do you have any, how much more texting do you have left? Instead of how many sets do you have left?
It's,
you know,
sickening.
And it's a different mindset. In the old days, if you sat on a machine and you weren't using it,
you
got a dirty look, and if you didn't move, you got thrown off the machine.
Exactly.
And by the way, put your weights back in a rack.
Yep.
You know,
yeah, that's where we come from, you know, and I totally agree. The last time when I actually went back in after this layoff, and I started floating back down into Gold's Gym, the Mecca down here, is about 200 miles away from me. And so I started going there a little more often. And boy, I tell you what, the atmosphere was so different in there. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's people taking selfies, and it was just a whole different vibe that I did not care for. You know, that's a place where you go in, you get your work done, and you get out of there, you know, and it's not like that anymore. But you're right. And with my, even in my own training studio, you know, with my trainers, I said, look, you have to be, the discipline is not easy. You know, it just doesn't come naturally. I don't think it's a learned something that you have to learn how to do to be able to, you know, once you get past that honeymoon and you've got a lot of clients that you're working with, to have the discipline to go in each time and give up yourself, because that's exactly what you're doing. You're giving up your knowledge and your enthusiasm and your coaching and your this, that, and the other for that client to get, to help achieve, for them to achieve a better version of themselves. That is way easier said than done. You know that, and I know that. But when you're going in, and that's the reason why, in my opinion, most of them that do fail is because they don't have the wherewithal to maintain that discipline and to give themselves up like that and to continue to learn and not get to the point where you're just mailing it in, because clients, they feel that and they don't want to be a part of that, just like they don't want to be a part of going to the gym where you have to wait for equipment. You're not going to have a clientele.
If you make it another job for the person to come into the gym, they're not going to want it.
Right. Yeah.
So I have it a little easier than some of the younger guys that need to put food on the table doing this. I'm retired. I was in the brokerage industry for 36 years. So I have that pleasure of saying to people, no, I don't want to train you.
Beautiful.
And it actually makes them want you even more.
That's right.
That's why I hate being a salesman, but it's a beautiful technique.
It really is.
They want to use it. Our gym that I'm affiliated with, a small local gym, they don't give a free session to a new member. So the trainers do this and, you know, you don't get paid for that. You just give a free session in the hopes of maybe they'll sign on with you for future sessions.
Yeah.
So right away, the people, they want to know what the prices are. I said, well, first, let's see if this is for you. Let's see if the gym is for you. Let's see if my style is for you. Before I give you a price, I have to know if we're compatible.
Right.
And I say to them, quite frankly, by the questions you're asking, you're not the type of client I usually take.
That makes me want you more right there a lot of times.
So, you know, I would say to them, no, you have to be accountable. I'll tell you what, you want to lose weight? Okay, I tell you what, here's your free session. Don't sign up with me because I'm not going to sign you up. Go do this. No bread, no alcohol for 3 weeks. Come back and give me your weight. See, let me see how you did.
Yeah, I like that. You know,
they'll say, well, wait a minute. Oh, I have 3 kids. I have to have a cup of wine every night or 2 beers on the train or 3 beers. And I said, well, then you're not for me.
Right.
If you don't have the discipline to change. And I said, and usually tell them, how's that working for you? You like what you see? You like how you feel? What's the doctor say? Oh, you haven't been into the doctor for 4 years? I won't train you until you get a physical.
Right. No, I like that. And, you know, and basically what you're saying is, look, you stand for something, Larry.
Right. I don't want to train you and then you don't succeed to where I think it's success. Yeah. And you just tell people, oh, I had him as a trainer. Didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's right.
Well, that's because you didn't follow the procedures and the protocol, and you weren't accountable to, not to me, you weren't accountable to yourself.
Right.
So.
And when I, you know.
That's the way I handle it.
Well, yeah. And the same thing with me when I'm in my the consultation, essentially what you're doing is a consultation. You're fact finding and you're laying in that little moment, you're letting that person know, look, this is what I expect. You know, this is what you need to do. You know, I want you to be this many hours a week. Can you do that? If you can't do that, then you need to go to the gym over there that's across the street, because this is what I need from you in order for you to get some of the goals that you're asking for. So, you know, you and I are the same that way. And you know what? And you're exactly right. That's when you, and if you take that mindset like you have and stand for something, then you're going to always have a clientele, because they're going to know that you are in this thing with them, but they have to be a part of that damn program. It just doesn't happen.
Right. Now, there's another part of what I do is I do meal plans for people. Now, I'm not a nutritionist, but I know what works and doesn't work. And I can usually figure out the combination of the carbs, protein, and fats, along with low intensity cardio, for the most part, to burn the fat, and some weight training. And those are the three parts that I use to help somebody maintain a healthy lifestyle or become healthier.
Yeah.
And I charge for my meal plans. That's what I do mostly. And, you know, they send pictures in weekly, and we discuss their energy levels. We discuss their strength levels, how they're sleeping, all sorts of things, yeah. Mental, physical. But if I see you in the gym, and you're doing your cardio, and I'm training you with weights, but nothing's changing, it has to be what you're putting inside.
Yeah, exactly.
And how do you know are you cheated? You had to cheat.
Yeah.
You cheated. I don't have to be there to see you, to watch you, because right. I'm looking at
it's
you.
Obvious.
It's 3 weeks. You haven't lost, you've gained 3 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever the case may be. I'm making up a story.
No, I know what you're saying. Exactly the same. Because people do that, you know, and they want to blame everything but themselves. Oh, yeah, I've tried everything. You know?
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. They took out cookies at work, and so I had a whole bag. Well, you couldn't stop after two. Yeah.
But they were healthy.
Yeah.
So they ate the whole bag. This
right,
is
I put peanut butter on it.
Yeah, but they were healthy. Yeah, I know. I understand that. Listen. Tell me about what's your favorite exercise if you have one. I'm curious to know that. What's your favorite exercise?
I would say walking.
Okay. And what's your least favorite exercise?
Least favorite exercise? The one most draining on my body?
Yeah, the one you just can't, you know.
That doesn't mean I don't like it, but it just annihilates me. One-arm rows.
One-arm rows. Okay. That's mine too. Mine is actually bent rows. Heavy barbell rows, because I can't breathe when I'm in that position.
And it takes the most out of me.
And what's your love hate? Maybe that's that exercise, but what's the exercise that you love to hate? You love it, but you hate it. You hate it just as much as you love it.
Squats.
Yeah, me too. Oh, brother. Okay, so you're in your bio, you mentioned your strategy is to pay it forward, which I really like seeing in this industry, because that's the only way that the sport truly does keep evolving. But, you know, it's you have to be willing to, you, me, and the people that are making this sport move and evolve, that you got to be willing to keep to stay hungry, as that movie that Arnold did that one year with Stay Hungry. But that's kind of true. You know, you have to be willing to be enthusiastic about it and to share that with somebody else, because that was my whole thing to get into my personal training business, was to share my knowledge and my experience with my clientele to make them a better version of themselves. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. And we talked about this earlier. I don't see this in gyms anymore like I used to. And I think part of it is social media. You know, I think the social media culture is, I think it's okay, but you know, I think the industry has become an industry of voyeurs, followers, and the misinformed to a degree. And I'm only saying that not only from the what I've seen in the gym, but you know, I take a look at, like, I go online to Google the news, and they have all kinds of you know, these personal trainers, so-called experts that come on, and they have their own ideas about whatever it may be, nutrition or whatever. And you know something, Larry, I can tell in 3 sentences that they don't know what the hell they're really talking about. I can just tell by the way, it's either that or the person that, you know, the editor, you know, they messed up. There's just too much misinformation out there. And so true information is lacking, you know, in my opinion. And it needs people like you and I in the industry. And I'm always searching out for people such as yourself. I like your energy. And
you
know, we need more of you and me that's out there. And I mean, when I came back, I'm actually less angry than I was. You know, you're seeing me now in a very positive state, because I came back and I was like, I was pissed at what I was seeing out there. I was like, I wrote these little books, and they're pages of blogs, 300 word blogs, and it's about exposing fake trainers. You know, it's like the survival guide for the average person because of what I was seeing out there, you know. And I think now I'm looking back, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe I came off a little bit too negative on that. And rather than go out and find guys like you, you know, and maybe just make it a little more positive, because they're still out there. Guys like you are still out there.
Of course there are.
You know?
And that's most of them are our age.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to find. You know, I like when I was in business, I used to have the same theories that I have now. It's learn something, teach something. Every day.
Yeah. I like that. That's simple now, to the point.
It's exactly. And you don't take a gun to the knife fight, all those other stupid little things have written on my board.
Yeah.
But the moral of the story is it doesn't matter how old you are, you can still learn something from somebody else. No matter if they're older or younger than you.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar with some of these names. I'll just yell them out. George Peterson.
Yes.
Arash Rabar, Sadiq Hadzabek.
Yep.
Juan Diesel Morel. These are guys I see every day in the gym.
Yeah.
These are professionals. These are guys from the Olympia stage. These are the best of the best in the world.
Yeah.
And they're all 20 years or 30 years younger than I am.
Yeah.
But some of their techniques, some of their ideas for exercises, some of the protocol for meal planning. I like to be a sponge.
Yep.
Now these guys will share their information with you. You just have to be smart enough to listen.
Right.
And as long as you're a good listener, you'll learn.
You bet.
And that's what we're here to. So if I learn something, I like to find someone else who will also listen.
Right.
And share that with them. Now it's their job to take it, see if it works, maybe make a change for themselves, and then teach somebody else that information.
Exactly.
That's how we all get better.
If
I help one person, that's what matters.
Nope, I agree. Because, you know, it's like one step at a time, and it accumulates, and all of a sudden you've got a whole bunch of people now that you've impacted, you know. And that's one of the things I think has surprised me the most in being in the, again, I've had these studios for 37 years, and I've trained thousands of people, and I didn't realize really to the extent how much my information really did impact certain people. And I'm humbled by that. And I've never forgotten that. You know, when somebody tells you that you've saved their life, I mean, I'm thinking, you gotta be kidding me, right? But they really mean that. It's like, you know, I take my personal training serious. And
yes,
when I work with people, and I think too many people take it as just a side job and, you know, just trying to get by.
Yes, and passing time.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and I don't, man. I take it very serious because I've seen what it can do to transform people. And I'm blown away by it. And I'll never forget that.
And that's why I don't take on too many clients, because I want to be able to give them that utmost attention that they deserve.
Yep.
If they're paying me, then I have to be accountable to them to make sure that I'm not just blowing them off because I have another client.
Yeah.
Who may be paying more, maybe paying less. It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
When I do show preps, I only do half a dozen people at a time because they may be doing the same show.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
No.
You can't have, I'm not that good where I can have 30, 40 people and train them for a show and they're all getting on stage within 30 days of each other.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That's a tough one.
I'm not into that.
Yeah. So when's your next competition?
Well, that's interesting because I came close to getting my pro card. You know, in the Masters divisions at 60 and over, you have to win the overall.
Right.
To get your card.
Right.
50 and over, they give it to the couple places.
Yeah.
But 60 and over, it's winner take all.
Yeah.
So I came close twice in the last 2 years. I took second twice. And my wife does all my prep. And that's hard work.
Yeah, it is.
She cooks the meals, measures them out. She knows my meal plan. She puts it on a grid and this stays this, that, and the other thing. She watches like a hawk to me.
Yeah.
So I made a promise last year that this was my last year at 60.
Yeah.
And then I took second and she said, I know you're not happy, so you're going to do it again next year, right? So I said, it wasn't that I wasn't happy. I wasn't satisfied.
Yeah.
Right. So I said, yeah. So I did the competitions this year. And at this point right now, I'm done.
Yeah.
because I made the, you know, I made the promise, and you know, I'm a man of my word, so yeah. I keep to my word.
Yeah. Well, listen.
But I'll help prepare elders, which I do.
Yeah.
And I'll live vicariously through them.
Why not?
But whether or not I get my pro card, it's a little disappointing to me. I would have liked to have had it. Maybe those call letters, IFBB, looks better on your Instagram.
Yeah.
You might get higher quality of clientele. But maybe I don't want that higher quality of hope. Maybe I want a young kid who needs help,
yeah.
who wants to start using some gear, and you want to keep him off the gear because he's 22 years old.
Right.
You know, something to that effect,
yeah.
and give him, show him that you could do this in a different fashion.
Yeah.
You know, so
well,
I had great people teach me when I was younger, and all throughout business, all throughout high school, and when there's a lot of kids in the gym now where I train that actually call me gym dad. I think that to me, that's an honor for me.
Yeah.
And I know their parents, because before I train them, if they're in their teens, I have to meet their parents.
Yeah.
Especially if they're young ladies. I make the father come in and say, "Here, I'm going to, when your daughter's in this gym,
yeah,
she becomes my daughter. She's protected. Don't worry about that."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I want you to know who's,
yeah,
training with her, dealing with her day to day, listening to her problems, coaching them through some of the young problems. I know if you have any children.
Yeah, too.
You know that they talk better to others than they talk to you.
Of course.
So my son would talk better to you,
right.
and maybe your son would talk better to me and listen, right? So that's what I become.
Yeah.
I'm a mentor and I love it.
Let me tell you something. I'm hugely inspired by you. I mean that, you know, because it's hardly do you come across people that are really this authentic. And I really do mean that, Larry. And I'm happy for you. And I think that you're exactly where you need to be. And yeah, I know what you mean, because I wanted to get my pro card too. And I didn't. But you know what? You're impacting people in so many ways that goes way beyond that pro card. And there's
somebody just told me this year, they said to me, "You don't need your pro card to be considered a pro."
That's right. I agree. Totally.
And that made me feel pretty good.
I agree. And you know, you're competitive. I'm competitive. It's like, yeah, but I still wanted that damn thing.
Oh, you know? Yeah, I still do.
Hanging on the wall there. So I get that. But no, you're really great for the industry, and I'm really glad that you decided to come on my show. I'm honored, and
it was my privilege.
I love it.
I think it's great.
Hey, listen, whenever I get up in your area, don't be shocked if I give you a little buzz.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can take me to Jersey or something, and give me a meal or something I can eat.
Oh, anytime. And you can look me. You tell your viewers whatever. At Mr. 60 on Instagram.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay.
I don't post much.
Yeah.
But and it's not always pertaining to the industry.
Yeah.
For instance, I'll give an example, a quick example before we go. On they call it Flex Friday.
Yeah. Yeah.
I posted a picture of my grandson, so I flexed my heart muscle, I said.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd rather post stuff that's meaningful than, look at me. I did 5 reps.
I know. Yeah.
Of this, with the 120s, look at me. I can do that.
Yeah, I know.
That doesn't mean much to me, except if I come up with some type of theory, I'd rather post that or say, here's my progress from here to here. Or here's one of my clients who lost 107 pounds in 9 months.
Yeah. Gotcha. You know. Yeah. Anyway, good talking to you. And
my pleasure.
Hey, listen, maybe we can do this again one day.
Absolutely.
All right, man. You take care of yourself on the East Coast.
Yep.
Okay.
Be well.